the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. It's Idaho Matters. Bird flu continues to be a problem around the country and here in Idaho, where at least 20 dairy operations have been hit. Meanwhile, Finland is the first country to start handing out vaccines for the virus. The CDC has issued a health advisory for dengue fever in the U.S., and there's a new, deadlier strain of Mpox spreading in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's Wednesday, time for our Doctor Roundtable with Dr. David Pate. He's the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and he is our guide through all things public health. If you have a public health question, send us an email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, hello and happy Wednesday.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Okay, bird flu in Idaho. What's the latest?
Well, unfortunately, we're setting the record for most number of documented outbreaks of this avian influenza virus on dairy farms.
Lucky us.
And that also includes the previous record that we were the first to identify that this virus could infect alpacas. So this is not good. We have a lot of continued spread of this virus, despite the fact that the USDA has indicated that they've taken measures to contain the virus. But this started in March, and it is still spreading to more and more dairy farms, more and more poultry farms, and more states across the United States. And that is very concerning. I can't say that this is going to develop into a pandemic. It would have a number of steps it still has to go through, but we rarely get to watch what are all the things that would happen for a pandemic to unfold. And we're basically watching them right before us. And it's like, hello, anybody paying attention here? So it may not turn out to be a problem, but this is very concerning that as of yet, we still don't know for sure how this is spreading. We have not been able to contain the spread through our implemented measures so far. We don't have the transparency that we need, and we don't have the cooperation of farmers that we need. And that's really on our federal government, because they have to provide the incentives for these farmers to want to participate with us. And the fact that we're not getting their cooperation means we're not learning what we need to learn about it. Fortunately, Michigan is the state that does appear to be taking the lead in really getting after this. And they are going to start doing a study of farm workers to look at their serology, in other words, test for antibodies, to see if more of these farm workers have been infected than we think. So far, in 2 years, we only know of 3 cases of infection. But if the antibody test tells us that there's a lot more spread, it would be a good news, bad news story. The bad news would be that this virus has adapted to be able to transmit more efficiently to humans, and we've missed it. The good news would be that the mortality rate for this particular virus in humans in the past has been about 52%, which is very, very high. And that includes children. And so if we found that, in fact, a lot more people had been infected and were just fine, that would bring that percentage way on down. I don't think it's going to get into a level where we would not be worried about it. I think it's still going to be high, but it may not be as high as 52%. I'm very anxious to see the results of that study.
There's a really good article out by the Idaho Statesman. They reported that some Idaho dairy farmers are hesitant to report cases to authorities. And that makes sense. This can be a really big deal. It can make or break you know, a farming operation. And then, as you said, the federal government milk reimbursement for these farmers is not coming through, even though it's been promised by the USDA. One of the things I saw in this article is that our Department of Health and Welfare is going to start checking wastewater for bird flu. Is that because we saw this during COVID?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, there is definitely some utility to that. The problem is going to be is right now, we can't really distinguish bird flu, which is an influenza A, from the seasonal influenza viruses, which are usually A and B. Now, right now, we can pretty much guess if we're detecting it, it's mostly the avian flu, because our seasonal flu season now has gotten to where our levels of influenza A are very, very low. So that will work for now. The problem in my mind is, what are we going to do when we get back to flu season? Because you expect to see influenza in A in people, but if we're all we're doing is just testing to see if there's influenza A, we're not actually sequencing, so we know whether it's avian influenza or human influenza. I do think it's going to help us for the next few months, but then I think it's just going to, I won't know what to make of it. And I think we're going to have to figure out what we do, because here's the other issue that I don't hear many people talking about, and that is, not only does it appear that in rare cases, the cows can infect humans with the avian influenza, and it's passing through their udders into the milk. We're pretty sure of that. How exactly humans are getting it, it's not clear. Certainly, personal protective equipment should help, but it's getting pretty darn hot. And you have to wonder about the compliance we're going to get of people wearing the personal protective equipment. But the converse appears also true, that humans could transmit the human viruses to the cows. Now, what that creates as a source of angst for those of us that watch and monitor for these kind of potential pandemic situations is that you can take influenza A's from bird source and from human source, and you can put them in a skillet and kind of do like scrambled eggs, and they'll come out together. And so what we have to be worried about is what we technically call reassortment, where they swap parts of the genetic material, and that might help this virus get over the problem that it's not really good at transmitting to humans now. But if you add some parts of, here's the bird part and here's a few human parts, you could end up with a virus that now could more efficiently transmit to humans. We are going to have to make sure that these farm workers are getting vaccinated, that we try to prevent them from getting the seasonal flu, that if they are sick, that we're keeping them away from these animals. What we don't need is a whole bunch of avian flu circulating in the cows and a whole bunch of seasonal flu circulating in the farm workers. That would be concerning.
Okay. Let's talk about vaccines, because I read this article about the first mass human bird flu vaccines in Finland. Apparently, Finland has bought up a bunch of vaccines and is gonna vaccinate folks for bird flu who might be at risk.
Yeah, this is another example where Finland is kind of out ahead of the United States, and I'm not so sure that necessarily the vaccination of farm workers is the answer, but at least Finland's thought about it, talked about it, made a decision. We have not heard much from our USDA and CDC about this and how we're going to protect our farm workers yet, other than the PPE. And we all kind of probably have an idea how that's going to go. And so, kudos to Finland. Finland, to my knowledge, doesn't even have this virus circulating in their cows. It's in their poultry, as it is here in the United States as well. And so they're taking a pretty aggressive step for their public health, and you do have to give them kudos. What I hope is that the World Health Organization and the CDC will learn from this, take a look and see, let's see how these workers respond to the vaccine. Is the vaccine protective? Does it generate a good immune response? Does it protect them from getting that infection? We need to learn all we can, because if this does change, we're going to need vaccines, and we're going to need them in a hurry, and we're not going to get them in a terrible hurry.
Dengue fever is back in the news, and the CDC actually issued a health advisory this week, and they were telling doctors to watch out for this in the U.S. What's the latest? Remind us, dengue fever, where does it come from? Why is it now spreading?
Yeah, so dengue fever is transmitted by a virus, and it's the vector or the insect that transmits it to humans is the mosquito, a specific species of mosquito. And that is often a problem in the central United States and, I'm sorry, the Central Americas and the South America countries. And I've been watching it the last few years, because they've really, at times, they've been overwhelmed at their hospitals with cases. And I've been worried about what's going on with dengue, because dengue certainly can cause very serious illness. And but what has happened is, with the warming temperatures, that mosquito has been able to move northward. So while we haven't had much dengue in the United States, what we saw is we had way more cases already in this first 6 months of this year than we have in a typical year. And we're identifying the mosquito in where you would expect, the southern states. So California, Texas, Florida, particularly. And so whereas when I was in practice, I'd be on the alert for it, but typically in people from those countries that were here visiting someone and got sick, or travelers that had gone there and came back and got sick. But what we're seeing now is cases that have been identified as happening, being transmitted here in the United States, not in people that didn't have any travel. Dengue can cause a very mild illness, particularly with your first infection. Some of your long-term listeners will remember that there was some concern at the very beginning of COVID whether we were going to see something called antibody-dependent enhancement or disease enhancement, and we did not. But some of the misinformation, doctors were continuing to suggest that there was, whereas what that would mean is that actually if you treated them with vaccine or treated them with antibodies, or they got infected again, they'd get much worse. Well, that didn't happen. But what this is, the classic disease for antibody-dependent disease enhancement. And so what that means is, a lot of times people get their first infection, they're okay, but there's four different species, if you will, and it doesn't protect you against those other ones. So let's say you get number one type. Well, if you now get infected with two, you could have a really bad reaction, because those antibodies that will respond because you've previously been infected don't neutralize the virus and actually assist it in getting into your cells. This is the issue we're having in Puerto Rico right now. They have for many years, decades, had type one dengue. And now for the last couple of years, they're starting to have a lot more two and three. And that means it will result in more severe illness.
That's not fair. That's
doesn't seem like it,
right? That's just wrong. Okay. So, some numbers worldwide, 9.7 million dengue cases have been reported, I think, this year. It's been called a traveler's nightmare. And I think what you're outlining is a big part of that. There've only been, and I say only, 2,200 or so cases in the U.S. this year. So my question is, in Idaho, where I'm sitting right now, am I going to get dengue? Do I have to be worried about dengue? How concerning is this, you know, from a public health standpoint?
No and no. If you're staying here in Idaho, you're good. The issue would be, Samantha, if I know we don't ever let you take vacation, but if you were to take a vacation and you were to go down to, say, you know, Panama, Brazil, Peru, those countries right now, you know, what we would want to do is talk to you about how to protect yourself against mosquito bites. And so we have measures that we can do to help protect you. And I wouldn't discourage you from going if that's what your plans were, but we would want you to take those precautions.
All right. And then Mpox is back. Well, it never really left, but there's a mutated, nastier strain of Mpox. It's spreading. Let's talk about Mpox. We'll talk about the new one and then the one back from 2022 that we talked about, we've been talking about.
Yeah, so Mpox is the relatively new name. Previously, it was referred to as monkeypox because it was first identified in monkeys. But this is a pox virus, and so you can contract it from being in close contact with somebody who has it. You might want to think about diseases like chickenpox. Now, it's not the same thing, but it is spread in a similar way, and it can have some skin rash manifestations that look similar. But this monkeypox virus has been causing local outbreaks in Africa. My recollection is since the 80s, but they've been pretty self-contained. What was very bizarre about what happened in 2022, and we talked about it a lot on this show, is that up until that time, the way people got Mpox was from being in close proximity, typically a caregiver, the medical person, or living in the home with people. And so these were easily contained. What happened in 22 is we started seeing these outbreaks of Mpox outside of Africa, which we had not seen before. So that was number one. Number two is we had not seen it spread sexually through sexual transmission. And this virus in 22 started being highly correlated with men having sex with other men across the globe. And so we started seeing this. We do have a vaccine for it. We are encouraging people at risk, which were particularly men who have sex with men that have multiple partners or unknown partners. They would be perfect to get the vaccine. We still offer the vaccine, so you can contact the public health department. But that infection was with one kind of species, if you will. We call it clades, not species, but people will think of it in the terms of species. So that type of Mpox, that was associated with about a 1% mortality. This Mpox you're talking about is a different clade, a different kind of species of the virus, if you will. And it has a mortality rate of around 5% in adults and 10% in children. Oh. So this is more serious. Plus, while we tended to see that latest outbreak with the other clade among typically men having sex with men, this particular Mpox does not require sexual transmission. It can just be close contact, and it can easily happen with heterosexual spread as well. And they particularly see it in sex workers, people that have multiple sexual partners. So this is going to be an increasing cause for concern, because if this gets out of Africa like the other clade did back in 22, we could certainly see a lot more dissemination of it, and it will not be as mild as what we saw in 22. And frankly, if you ask the people that got infected, most of them were not going to tell you it was mild. It can be very painful, and it's certainly a problem, and we're watching it closely.
So we've got about 3 minutes left, and we've been talking a lot about a lot of infectious diseases today. So are you worried that we could be just a step away from one or more new pandemics on the horizon? And I'll ask a corollary to that, especially since we talked about, you know, hesitation to report disease, whether it's in Idaho Farmers or others. Can that, you know, is that a concern that you know, could lead to more issues and a greater danger of new pandemics?
Absolutely, Samantha. I am worried about it. First of all, if you just look back to recent history, we've had pandemics roughly every decade. There's no reason to believe we're going to have fewer of them, and especially because of the fact that we are a ever-growing, globally interconnected world. And so people are going to travel and take those germs with them and potentially infect other people. Number two, just as you said, we're not paying the attention we need to be to these diseases. I've already mentioned, I am quite staggered that our approach to this avian influenza, which would be on the list of potential pandemic suspects, is not more aggressive and transparent than before. Frankly, our behavior is not a whole lot different than what we got furious with China withholding information. Mm. We should be much more transparent about what's going on. I'm not sure why we're not, but I fear about that because lack of transparency puts us at a disadvantage of being prepared. And then finally, I think we're less prepared as a consequence of the COVID pandemic. We have seen legislators trying to score political points, but doing absolutely stupid public health measures like saying, well, let's outlaw mRNA vaccines. Well, that's crazy. If we have a new pandemic and if you have a disease that's killing 10% of the people, you would thank your lucky stars for an mRNA vaccine. So that's stupid. All these measures about, well, you can't have vaccine mandates, you can't have mask mandates, all these different things, or even trying to, you know, block the use of masks in public. We are going to be so far behind if we have another pandemic. And I am not saying that means that I'm in favor of mandates, but you got to allow those that want to protect themselves to be able to protect themselves. They call this medical freedom, but it's not, it's the opposite. You're actually taking away protections from people. And finally, I just had a bad report come out about the National Strategic Stockpile and that it has been mismanaged and we're not prepared.
On that happy note, we've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a COVID-19 question or any public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. We'll get it on next week. Dr. David Pate, thank you so much for all you do.
Well, thank you, Samantha. I'll try to cheer you up next week.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.